Good morning and welcome. It's week 9 of the legislative session, and you are on the FLC Monday morning call-in. For those of you that are new to the call-in, and I hope there's none of you, but we do go around the horn with each of our lobbyists, hearing updates on the bills still in play as we enter this, hopefully, is what is the final week of session. So the lobbyists will go around the horn talking about the key bills they're watching and working on, where we need your help on the advocacy front. Once the lobbyists have shared their updates, we'll open the call for questions. If you'd like to ask a question at that point in time, you'll press *9 on your phone. As a reminder, this call is being recorded. We'll send an email summary out later this afternoon, as well as a link to the call's recording. Please note, it's not possible to cover every single bill that's been filed during a 30-minute call-in, but for a comprehensive list of bills, you can go to the League's website, flcities.com, hover your mouse over the Advocacy tab, and about halfway down is the Bill Summaries button that you can click on to see the full menu of the bills that impact cities this legislative session. As I mentioned earlier, it's week 9. This is supposed to be the last week of session. There is still no agreement on top-line budget numbers. The House and Senate continue to negotiate that. They remain multiple billion dollars apart at the moment. And that's important because they have to agree on top-line numbers before they can agree on the funding levels within each of the silos. The other part is that the Florida Constitution requires a 72-hour cooling-off period on any agreed upon budget. And so it's trending towards not getting done this week. Now, there's still more questions than answers on that front. The legislature could extend into early next week if they're able to get to a budget agreement sometime this week, or they could adjourn on Friday and come back at a later date for a special session on the budget. So lots of uncertainty in Tallahassee here this final week of session. With that as the intro, I'm going to kick it to Charles Chapman for our finance and tax update this week.
Well, good morning, everyone. And just to keep you informed about some finance and tax bills that are still in play that we've been talking about previously, I'd like to mention Senate Bill 1664 and House Bill 1221 regarding local option sales taxes. Both of these bills are still very much alive, still very much in play. Senate Bill 1664 by Senator Trumbull would actually require all local option sales taxes, including tourism development taxes, to be considered by referendum. However, there was an amendment that was filed a couple of weeks ago that would allow for any local sales tax levy that currently has an expiration date on it that goes beyond the stated 8 years of expiring in 2033, to be able to live out through the life of its current expiration date, and that any future levies may name their own expiration timestamp into the future beyond the minimum of 8 years. 1664 has not been heard on the Senate floor yet. We do anticipate this to be a part of negotiations as House Bill 1221 is being considered by the Senate. For those of you that have been following 1221 in the news lately, this is by Representative Miller, but we do know that this is a House Speaker priority. 1221 was amended last week to reduce the scope of the bill to address tourism development taxes in particular, and allows that all tourism development taxes may be used by counties for general public purpose. However, if the counties do use the tourism development taxes for general purposes, they must reduce their property tax rates proportionately. To say that a different way, if counties decide to use tourism development taxes for general everyday public operations, they must reduce their property tax levies dollar for dollar. There's a lot of concern in the tourism industry about this bill. However, House Bill 1221 did pass off the House floor. It is now sitting in Senate messages and has been referred to the Senate Appropriations Committee. This means that these two bills, 1221 and 1664, will be subject to negotiations as the House and Senate continue to do their work on the overall budget. Speaking of tax packages overall, House Bill 7033 did pass off of the House floor. This is the House tax package in particular. It does include the local option sales tax bills I just mentioned. But also, you may remember that we've had concerns with House Bill 7033 because it removes the opt-out for live local property tax exemptions. Again, this has passed off the House floor. It has been sent over to the Senate, and this is a part of the exchange between the House and Senate on the various tax packages. So we will keep you informed as we know more. Thank you for your support. Please encourage senators to be knowledgeable about the negative impacts of these bills. And with that, I'll kick it over to David Cruz.
Thank you, Charles, and good morning, everybody. Got an update on the Community Redevelopment Association bills, or CRAs. A lot happened in the CRA realm last week. Starting off with a brief recap of what the bills did, both the House and Senate bills were originally filed to try to terminate all CRAs in the state of Florida by the year 2045. It would prohibit the creation of new CRAs in the state, and then it would place restrictions on funding new projects within CRAs. The Senate last week in committee amended their bill to address the overwhelming majority of our concerns, and so that was a big win in the Senate. Essentially, the bill got rid of those three provisions I had just mentioned and was left with the main provisions being that CRAs could no longer change their boundaries, and that CRAs would be specifically prohibited for funding things like concerts and festivals and holiday events and parades. And so while we were very successful in addressing our concerns on the Senate side, the House unfortunately remained with their hardline approach, trying to terminate all CRAs. In addition to that, the House went ahead and amended two other unrelated bills into the CRA bill. They took the substance from Senate Bill 110 by Corey Simon. Senator Simon's bill was essentially the Rural Renaissance Program, which is a key Senate president priority. They took language from House Bill 1461 by Representative Yarkorski, and that was a Department of Business and Professional Regulation package that was controversial and had a lot of deregulation language within it. And ultimately, they put these all into one bill. The new bill now, for those keeping track at home, is Senate Bill 110, is now the vehicle that has all three of these bills. The House went ahead and amended that onto the House floor and passed it off the House. So the ball is now in the Senate's court, and the Senate now has Senate Bill 110 with that very harmful CRA language contained within it. The Senate has three options. They could decide not to take up Senate Bill 110, and all three of those bills would die this session. They can choose to amend that bill and put back in the provisions that were negotiated with the Senate as it relates to CRAs and send that entire package back to the House, or they could take up the bill as is and pass it off the Senate floor and send it to the governor. And so this is where we need your help. I would encourage you to reach out to your senators and tell them not to take up that last option. Definitely do not pass Senate Bill 110 as is. And instead encourage them to amend it back to the agreed upon language that passed off the Senate Rules Committee that does not terminate all CRAs, that does not place restrictions on funding new CRA projects, and does not prohibit the creation of new CRAs. So that's the update on CRAs. For those also keeping track at home on the sovereign immunity front, I think we're in a good place as it relates to sovereign immunity. While that bill ended up passing the House this session, the Senate never heard it in a single committee. Committees are no longer meeting in the Senate, and so I think it's safe to report that we're in a good spot as it relates to sovereign immunity. So with that said, I'll pass it over to Matt Singer.
Thank you, David, and good morning, everyone. I have an update for you on the utility relocations bills. House Bill 703 was passed off the House floor last week with an amendment that made it identical to the Senate bill. These bills originally would have shifted the costs for utility relocation when cities initiate a road project and shifted those costs for relocation from the private sector onto the public sector. This could have resulted in hundreds of millions, if not into the billions of dollars of fiscal impacts onto the public sector, and is now amended to only take $50 million and put it into a grant program where utility service providers can apply for reimbursement. This is a much more palatable version of the bill and is an agreement between the stakeholders. And so that bill was passed off the House floor and referred to Senate rules on the Senate side, that bill can be just pulled out of committee and heard on the Senate floor. And so we do anticipate those bills to pass this week. I have an update for you on the emergency management legislation. Senate Bill 180 has been passed off the Senate floor a few weeks ago and sent over to the House and has been waiting its companion, House Bill 1535. These bills are still substantively different, and the league certainly prefers the Senate bill. And so what that means for you is to make sure that either the burdensome and restrictive language that we've been working on gets pulled out of the House bill, and if it does not and is passed off the House floor, then we need the Senate to stay strong and keep the Senate version of the bill. And so for that, what you should do is to contact your senator and let them know what's been going on and where this stands. Ask them to hold strong and pass the Senate bill as is if it does get bounced back to the other chamber. Again, this is House Bill 1535 and Senate Bill 180, and your ask is to prefer the Senate bill. That's the update I have for you. Thanks for your help this session. And with that, I'll pass it to Rebecca O'Hara.
Good morning, everyone. I just have a couple of updates for you on bills you're interested in. The first of which is the enterprise fund transfer issue. This is House Bill 1523 by Representative Busada. That bill, while it did pass the House and it's in Senate messages, does not have a viable Senate companion. The House sponsor attempted to amend several other bills with the enterprise fund language, but ultimately withdrew those amendments. So we're in a good spot with that issue as we finish out the last week here. On housing, Senate Bill 1730, which is the Senate Live Local Act clarification bill. This bill is passed the Senate and it is in House messages. The House companion, if you want to call it that, because the bills are still a bit different, is House Bill 943 by Representative Vicky Lopez. That bill is on second reading in the House. It could be taken up by the House. The House will likely take up the Senate bill and either amend it or pass the Senate bill as is. But as of yet, it's not on a special order calendar for today because the House isn't in session today. On a related note, the accessory dwelling unit bill, this is House Bill 247 by Representative Connerly and Senate Bill 184. The House bill is on second reading in the House. It's ready to be taken up by the full House. The Senate bill is in House messages, so the play is in the House's hands. The bills are slightly different, so they would need to be amended, but they're not different in any respect dealing with accessory dwelling units. So they are substantially similar when it comes to that part of the bill. That's all I have for you. Next, you'll hear from Sam Wagner. Thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca. I've got two bills for y'all today. We've got Senate Bill 110. As David mentioned, the sponsor of this one is Senator Simon, currently opposed to this bill. It has expanded in scope, and it has policies helping to modernize rural communities across the state, which is the priority of the Senate president. However, the House did add those two additional larger issues to the bill, the CRA and the DBPR issue. The Senate will likely take this bill up this week. The second bill I have for you is Senate Bill 954 and House Bill 1163. This is a certified recovery residences bill by Senator Gruters and Representative Owen. We're currently in a monitoring position on these bills. The Senate bill requires each county and city to adopt an ordinance by January 1st of 2026 that includes a process for providing reasonable accommodations and land use regulations for certified recovery residences. These ordinances must comply with the Fair Housing Amendments Act and the Americans with Disabilities Act. The ordinance must establish a formal application process, require a written determination within 60 days, and allow for an automatic approval if the decision is not made within that time frame. The Senate bill passed and is now in House messages. The House will release its agenda today around 5:30, and we will know whether or not the House bill will be up tomorrow or on Wednesday of this week. That is all I have for you, and we'll pass it back to Casey Cook.
Thank you, Sam. All right, let's transition into the question and answer portion of the call. As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, you'll press *9, and then when you start or when you're recognized, please state your name and the city you're affiliated with. While we're waiting on our first caller, I would like to publicize the post-session legislative webinar that we do. That's going to be May 15th in the afternoon. There will be a registration link on our website currently, and we will also include one in the email summary that we send out later today. So with that, let's go to our first question.
Yeah, this is Mike McCollins from Everglades City.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, good morning. In all these conversations about the change of the ad valorem tax to the bed tax, for those people that, like me, live in a very small town which has very little occupancy in hotels, and the money flowing through the county, is anybody having any conversation about how this function is supposed to work for those of us that are about to go into budget meetings?
Hey, good morning, Commissioner. So the discussion we've been having is the TDT provisions and House Bill 1221 are relevant to county property tax ad valorem. There is not a direct municipal impact. However, if you do receive dedicated dollars, which is going to be county by county in unique scenarios, probably given to an intergovernmental agreement, but if, say, Everglades City has an agreement for direct funding from the TDT monies the county receives, then that could be at risk. If there is not an existing agreement, then it would be subject to an annual appropriations process by the county pursuant to rulemaking that they have to determine as they adopt an ordinance if this were to go into effect.
Thank you.
All right, next question.
Good morning, Jennifer Viscara, Sunny Isles Beach. I have some procedural questions. We can use 301 as an example. So it hasn't been, or it's only went to one committee. Can it be considered dead, or can it still be picked up by the other side?
Great question. I mean, the first thing I'll say is nothing is truly dead until they drop the hankies and adjourn, sign, and die. That being said, if a bill hasn't been heard by one body, it is most likely dead. Now, they could still take up the House bill in messages, and this being they being the Senate could take up that House bill in messages, but I just don't see that happening, recognizing there was a sovereign immunity bill filed in that body. It was not heard in any of its committees of reference. Typically, that means that there wasn't an appetite for change on that issue. And so I would say that, you know, we feel pretty good right now that the sovereign immunity bill is dead. And for those bills that are stuck in committees that are no longer meeting, the same thing also applies.
So you bring up my second question, which is, what does it mean to be in messages? What does that step look like?
That's a great question. Thank you for asking it. So in messages means that the bill has passed off of one floor. So let's say it's a House bill that has passed through the House. It's been approved by the full House. It then goes in what they call in messages. Imagine a letter in the mail going from the House to the Senate. It then sits in the Senate. It's eligible to be taken up or added to the special order calendar. That typically only happens, though, when the Senate bill is in a similar posture and it's passed all of its committees of reference but hasn't been heard on the floor yet. So when you hear messages, especially when we talk about it this last week of session, there will be bills ping-ponging back and forth between the two chambers as they start to negotiate ideas or they send take-it-or-leave-it offers. In messages is a term that's used frequently, just describing that House bill moving over to the Senate or the Senate bill moving over to the House as they negotiate ideas.
Okay, and then last question. When will we know, I mean, it'll be in the next few days, right? Like, when will we know what's definitely dead? Like, what didn't make it onto the calendar at all?
I'm not trying to be a smart aleck here, but really nothing is dead until they end or adjourn, sine die. And right now we don't even know, you know, when sine die will be. As I talked about earlier in the call, there's all of this stuff, all of these conversations are happening behind closed doors between the appropriations chairs or the Senate president and the Speaker of the House. They're trying to resolve all those differences and come up with a plan ahead. As I mentioned earlier, they can extend session, which is challenging because it's Florida State's graduation this weekend, and I don't think there's any hotel rooms available in the city, or they could adjourn sine die and come back for a special session. Now, if they do that, they'll have to agree on the scope of the call, meaning it could be budget plus implementing bills, or it could be broader than that. It could be the budget and implementing bills plus policy in certain areas. So all of that stuff's happening right now behind the scenes, and we don't know with certainty, you know, when they will end or what the plan is. I would expect an announcement in the next couple of days, though, over, you know, what each body plans to do.
Understood. Okay, that's all for me. Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am. Next question.
Dr. Johnson, Village of Palm Springs.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Two questions. Senate Bill 818 and Companion Bill, House Bill 703. Will there be any matching required for that grant money? It's the utility relocation.
Yes, sir. Good morning. This is Matt Singer. In terms of the local fund matching, for our projects, it will be taking the $50 million from the state share of communication services taxes before that gets redistributed back down to local governments. And so that will go into a grant program for our municipal initiated relocation project, so to speak. The state side of it will be funded by DOT directly. So when they're initiating a road project, they'll be paying for their own stuff too.
Okay. Thank you for that. My second question, Matt, probably for you as well, is Senate Bill 1208, Companion Bill, House Bill 1187, the Service Lateral Assessment. Any words on that?
There's a strong indication that that one is dead too, but again, it's not over until the hanky drops. But that bill on the House side had four references, and I don't believe it was ever heard in any of the committees, and so as strong of an indicator as there can be at this point, sir, it looks like that one is dead.
Sweet. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. All right, next question.
Good morning, everyone. This is Sandy Golding from Jacksonville Beach. Just want to thank everyone, all of the lobbyists, for all your hard work, and appreciate everything that you're doing to keep us up to date on everything. This question is for Rebecca O'Hara about the ADU bills. As I understand it, the Senate bill was amended to require that the ADU be rented for a month or more. And I know there was a lot of debate about in the House Commerce Committee, because the House bill does not require that, and there's concerns about the ADUs being used as vacation rentals. Do you have any sense as to whether the House will take up the Senate bill? And what would our ask be for our House members?
Thank you, Sandy. So yes, the bills are different in that regard. At one point, the House bill also had a 30-day requirement for rentals, but it was taken out at its last committee stop. I'm not sure whether that was done intentionally to leverage some negotiation between the two bills on the House's part, but I do know that the short-term rental issue was a key aspect. Including it was a key aspect to getting it passed in the Senate. I don't have any indications as to which bill the House will take up and which version will pass, but the Senate, if they do not give the Senate a bill that has the 30-day requirement in it, the Senate may have a lot of concerns about passing it.
Okay, so would our ask be for them to take up the Senate bill?
The ask would be to include a restriction on short-term rentals in the House bill or pass the Senate bill.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Next question.
Hi, this is Penny Gold from Longboat Key. I had a question about, and I guess this is for Rebecca, about House Bill 943 and Senate Bill 1730. What are the significant differences between those two? And it sounded from the report that 943 was the version moving. I just wondered if they are both quite as bad as I think they are.
Thank you for the question. Well, there's something to loathe in each bill. The reason why you've seen more action on House Bill 943 is because the Senate got their bill through the process sooner. So 1730 has been hanging out in House messages for at least a week, if not 2 weeks. The major differences between them are, and I'm probably not going to hit all of them, but primarily the biggest sticking point between the House and the Senate has to do with the modifications that both bills make to the Fair Housing Act. There's new language being added in both bills that would allow somebody to bring a cause of action under the Fair Housing Act against the local government if the local government takes an action that discriminates against a project because it's affordable. So both bills have that in it. Where they differ is the House bill provides for an express waiver of sovereign immunity to go along with that cause of action. So what that means is the local government would be liable for damages with no limit as to what the damages would be. So there's no waiver of sovereign immunity and there's no cap on the amount of damages in the House bill. So that's a pretty big difference between the two of them. The second difference between them has to do with an issue relating to evacuation times in the Florida Keys. Not something that affects everybody else in the state, but the House and the Senate do have differing language on how these housing issues will play out in the Florida Keys, and that is a sticking point between the two chambers as well. There are other differences between the bills that I would characterize as relatively minor, but those are the two, those are the main ones.
Is Keys used as a generic term or specific to particular keys, because we're on Longboat Key.
Okay, no. It's
and certainly have evacuation issues.
Yeah, yes. No, this is specific to the Florida Keys and Monroe County.
Okay, Monroe County, all right. All right, well, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, next question.
Good morning, everyone. This is Mayor Michael C. Blake, your president of the Florida League of Cities, and I just want to say thank you to the league, Casey and the staff, but also our elected officials as we embrace and embark upon week number 9. And I just want to say thank you for your commitment and dedication to everyone. Job well done. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President. And again, thank you for your leadership. You've done a tremendous job this session. We appreciate you. Next question. Next question, please.
Casey, this is William Whitson from Orange Park.
Hey, William.
Yes, good morning. On the Senate Bill 110, I'm assuming that there's just one message the league would like to send on the Senate side is to just not take up the bill or vote no? I mean, give me a little more specifics on that so we could get the right message to our senator.
Sure. So 110 originally started as the Rural Renaissance Bill, and that was, you know, one of President Albritton's priorities. The House has junked the bill up, I'll say, by including the CRA issue as well as, I believe, the dereg package as well. So the message is, you know, we support the Rural Renaissance portion of that bill. So if you want to pass 110, do it without the CRA language or the dereg package. Pass it out as they originally did, where it's exclusively the Rural Renaissance language. So that would be the message on 110.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Next question.
Hey, everybody. Holly Smith, City of Sanibel. This is for Rebecca. Rebecca, on the last speaker from Longboat Key, I think that's a really good point about evacuation routes possibly being expanded to other coastal communities that have the same situation. That was just a comment. My question is on the ADU bill. I believe there is language in there, but I'm hoping you can clarify that this does not preempt grandfathered zoning, setbacks, and density requirements. Have you seen something specific that would kind of clear that hurdle for those that do have all of that in place?
Thank you for the question. Yes, it is not expressly stated in the bill, what you just said. So there's no express intent or language that would recognize grandfathering. However, the bills both allow the ordinance that is required to be adopted to regulate the construction, permitting, and use of the ADU. So what that means is that if you are currently grandfathered under the short-term rental statute, then you can go ahead and do what you've been doing and apply that to ADUs as well, as long as it otherwise complies with the bill, assuming it gets passed and signed into law.
Okay, then a follow-up with that, because, you know, there's so few municipalities, towns, villages that have that in place, advantageous for us to weigh in on that, because if you're not grandfathered, basically it's doubling people's density without factors of any other types of use and needs and limitations. Is that something that we should be voicing now? And if so, how?
I would continue to voice the concern about short-term rentals if you are not a grandfathered city. At a minimum, the restoration of the language to limit any rentals of an ADU to 30 days or more would be critical.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, last call for questions. All right, folks, it's the last week of session. Stay close to your devices. A lot can happen here in these final 5 days. As we learn more, we will be sure to communicate that information out to you. Stay close to your devices. Look for the alerts. Respond quickly when you see them. We are in the fast-paced few days here of session, and it's important that we stay engaged all the way through the end, whenever that may be. Hopefully, we'll be able to check out a Hotel California at some point soon. Y'all have a great week. Stay close to your devices. We will talk to you later. Thank you.